Black, stop playing with him.
What's going on? Talk. And we're here coming towards the end of the week. We got Friday. It's Good Friday. Raining on my end, but I got a guest with me right now. It's Quay. How we doing?
It's raining on my end too, bro. Thanks for having me again, man. You know it's always a pleasure to join you on the show.
Oh, yeah, man. Most definitely. Most definitely, man. I had a I think for this morning, whenever I told you, I was like, yeah, I got to get some pancakes in me. I don't know. I just felt like I felt like Prince or something, like pancakes. Yeah, it was funny, man. But let's get down to business. I want to say that Ishkwe has found his way to go see Kevin Durant March 1st, first game in a Phoenix Suns uniform at Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets shut down LaMelo Ball, but that doesn't mean that we was going to, you know, saying not going, you know, saying people on TV, and especially not Ish, who's not going to sit there and be like, I'm not going to go watch the Hornets because you're going to get to see Kevin Durant in a Phoenix Suns uniform. Devin Booker, Chris Paul, you know, Monty Williams, everything they trying to get together to try to go for a championship run. What did you take from that experience, Ish? Tell us about it.
First and foremost, it was a pleasure to be in the building, man. Felt like that was pretty monumental to see Kevin Durant's first game as a Phoenix Sun. What I did notice is that KD hasn't lost anything. I was a little skeptical as to how he would be coming off of that injury and if he would be, you know, a little more timid because he was trying to figure out the gameplay and how their offenses ran. And right off the bat, it started off with the first couple series of them making sure he touched that ball. So they definitely made a concerted effort to make him comfortable in that offense and to show him that they know what he brings to the table and that they are more than willing to make sure that he gets his touches. What I did enjoy the most was Devin Booker. I was nervous to see how he was going to adjust to having somebody who's, I mean, let's just call it what it is, who's better than he is on his team. He hasn't had to experience that since he's come in the NBA. With a guy like Chris Paul, he may be considered better than him, like, early on, like, a few years back. But with that being the case, they're too different. Like, Chris Paul makes Devin Booker better. As far as Kevin Durant's concerned, it's kind of like taking some touches away from him. But Devin Booker was still assertive. He was still himself. He didn't come off as like a selfish type of guy that's like, well, yeah, Kevin Durant's here, but this is still my team. Like, he pretty much did whatever needed to be done for them to get that dub. So obviously, you know, it was the Hornets, so we were expecting him to win, but he definitely put on a show, and I'm excited to see what it's going to look like for them moving forward.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, 37 points, Devin Booker, 23 points for Kevin Durant. Chris Paul was able to just chill, get 11 assists. What did you like from DeAndre Ayton? I mean, you got to see the on-court, you know, reactions between him and Monty Williams. How is that with DeAndre Ayton getting Kevin Durant and, you know, saying, is that dynamic a little bit better?
Yeah, it definitely did. It looked like it from my perspective, mostly because I think you and I had talked about this before. It takes a little pressure off of DeAndre Ayton. Like, he's not necessarily somebody that they have to rely on for scoring now. He can do more things as far as rebounding and rim protecting. And it was an interesting matchup because for anybody who's been following the Hornets, they recently moved Mark Williams, the rookie from Duke, into the starting lineup. And since they moved him into the starting lineup, I want to say they were like 4-1 or 5-1 or something like that with him in the lineup. So he brought a huge boost to the team. So I was excited to see how him and Ayton would fare and how they would battle it out. And Mark Williams, he's a really good rim protector. But DeAndre Ayton just showed that he, you know, he's a little more experienced. He can still do what he needs to do no matter who the defender is. So it was good to see DeAndre Ayton be assertive at times. He may not have always scored the bucket, but he may have drawn a foul or brought on the help and dished it off. Like, he definitely did his part as far as what you would expect from DeAndre Ayton adding in a guy like Kevin Durant.
Okay. I mean, we have other players moved around and stuff like that. When we, you know, of course, Kyrie and Luka trying to get all the way downloaded. They've having some issues. Russell Westbrook went to the Clippers. I don't think they've won a game yet. So I think it's safe to say that Phoenix is definitely looking pretty good with these transactions. I mean, even if you look at the Lakers, I mean, yeah, we lost AD and LeBron in some games with injury, but I've seen positive things for Vanderbilt, Beasley. So, I mean, some of these moves around the league has been helpful. Now, some, you know, have not shown that type of help. But I will say that, you know, for what Patrick Beverley's went to the Bulls and turned them around a little bit. I mean, like, I think it was like the first few games, whatever like that, that they have held teams under 100 points and things of that nature. So, what do you think about Russell Westbrook in the situation with the Clippers? I mean, is it a Clippers thing or is it a when Russ got there type thing?
I think it's an efficiency thing. Russell Westbrook he and LeBron are very similar in the aspect of they need guys around them that can score in order for them to be the facilitators that everybody knows they can be. And by scoring, I don't just mean being able to get a bucket. I mean guys that can spot up, shoot the ball, and shoot it at a high clip. That's why we've seen the Lakers ascend the way that they have, because they went out and addressed that issue. As far as the Clippers are concerned, when they made this move for Russell Westbrook, they got rid of some shooters. They got rid of the Luke Kennards, and it's showing, like we saw in the last outing, that they didn't look good at all. Now, it's not to say that it's a Russell Westbrook thing, because I feel like he kind of gets a bad rap, mostly because of what's been happening lately, whether it be with the Lakers or the success that the Clippers are not having right now. Like, Russell Westbrook is a guy that needs certain pieces around him to be effective. And it looks on paper like it's a good fit with the Clippers. All it does ultimately is gives Russell Westbrook more freedom. Like, the court may be a little more space now. He can control the ball because LeBron's not on the court. But the floor spacing isn't going to be exactly what he needs, because they don't have people to stretch the floor like they need to. So I think it's going to take a little bit of time for them to actually put all of that together. I don't want to say that it's going to be a failure, but I don't necessarily think that adding Russell Westbrook to a situation as cloudy as the Clippers is going to make it better. Mm-hmm. But I don't, like I said, I don't want to say that it's going to be worse, but I don't think that it's necessarily going to be better either.
And he was traded to the Jazz initially, right?
Yeah, traded to the Jazz initially, and he was bought out and got to go wherever he wanted to. And it was a no-brainer that he was going to go to the Clippers. I mean, he's from LA. His home is in LA still, obviously. Like, he didn't have to do a bunch of shifting around in order to make the situation work. So that just seemed like the ideal place for him to be. And it's a contender. So I felt like it was a no-brainer. Like, everybody was making a big deal. Like, oh, he's doing this because he's spiteful that the Lakers traded him. Like, no, that wasn't the case at all. It was the smart move. Like, that was the only one that made sense.
Yeah. I'm like 30-some years old. I don't have to move. I'm making the money. Like, if I could play for the Clippers, I could play for the Clippers. That's cool. You know, like you said, that's all good with me.
People forget that these guys have families that, I mean, they have to take into account when they make decisions like this. Like, obviously, Russell Westbrook could have went somewhere else, but why uproot your whole family and move away from your hometown when you don't have to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, you know, whenever you're an ascending superstar, it might be like, oh, man, do I want to move to my hometown? You know, if you, like, when Kevin Durant was like 27, 28, coming up free agent, I understood him, you know, maybe not want to go to Washington. But like you said, Russell Westbrook at this point choosing to stay in a place where he's like, I've been here for the second season. I've been bought out. I could choose pretty much anywhere I want to go. And I remember people was like, "Oh, he should go to Chicago." Like, no, like you would want to stay, you know, saying where where you can at least compete, you know, saying the Clippers can't, you know, they can be in a position to compete, and like you said, being at home. I mean, like, it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. Yeah. But speaking of, the reason why I brought up the Jazz was real quick to sit there and say, man, like, they got themselves a star in their hands, don't they? I mean, Lauri Markkanen and what he's been able to do, I was dare say to why Russell Westbrook didn't sit there and say, man, can I do, unless the Jazz made it known that we don't need you, or you're, you know what I'm saying, like, or he was letting the one out. But if I was Russ, I would probably wanted to stay at the Jazz. Lauri Markkanen is at this point averaging 25 points per game, flirting with a 50-40-90, and he's 51% from the field. I mean, like 40% from the 3-point, 88% of the free throw line.
I mean, I personally think that it would have been a good fit as well, but I feel like the most appealing thing is the Clippers are more of a contender at the moment, as far as like playoff trajectory. Like, you add in a Russell Westbrook, you would assume like the Clippers would be better than the Jazz. And also, the point guard slot is open. Like, it's, they've got rid of Reggie Jackson. Wall hasn't been playing. So it was like, it was just, I felt like a fit. Like, he was like, you know, if I can go anywhere, let me weigh my options. And I feel like he probably did contemplate staying in Utah, but with them having Mike Conley down there, and Jordan Clarkson has been, he's been Lakers thought that he was going to be.
They traded Conley.
They traded Conley?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well,
traded Conley. They got Colin Sexton.
Oh, they do have Colin Sexton. So that might have something to do with it as well. Maybe. Competing with a young guard that is, I mean, Colin Sexton's a guy that's on the brink of having to prove himself, because of everything that happened in Cleveland. But, I just think ultimately the reason why he settled on the Clippers was because he joined back with Paul George, like I say, a hometown, and Utah would have been appealing because Lauri Markkanen is somebody that I've been high on for a while.
Me too.
He was down in Chicago and stuff. I knew that there was something not quite right with that situation because Lauri Markkanen is a baller.
Baller.
He's showing it now.
He can post or dunk. Like, he can shoot.
He can step out. Like, he does. Yeah. He's very versatile. He just needed a situation that would benefit him. So I feel like it would have been. I'm pretty sure it was appealing. I'm pretty sure Russell Westbrook gave that, you know, that little side eye, like, might be something here. Like, I might be. But then ultimately, let's just call it what it is.
Yeah.
It's Utah.
Yeah, it's Utah. Yeah, that's fact.
Utah and LA. Like, when you weigh in the options, it's not really comparable. So I feel like that was probably the deciding factor for him.
Yeah, I'm sure. And, you know, Kawhi, you know. I look at, you know, the Clippers' chance for history, too. He's probably looking at it like history. Like, if I can be contributing factor to getting the Clippers over the hump, just imagine that. And then people really can shut the fuck up. You know what I'm saying? Like, so a lot of things Russ can think in his head, like, why Paul George? Like, I played with Paul. You know? So, I mean, yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense.
Absolutely.
To the next point, and we're gonna keep it in the West. You know, I think now the murmurs, you know, the chirping is starting to begin with a little bit of like pressure added to the Joker. You know, people say European players don't get the same type of pressure as, you know, American players, superstars. You know, Joker's been a superstar in the league. He's, you know, possibly might be winning his third MVP. What is you to say? Which, you know, I think, you know, me personally, I think that Jokic has been doing a great job of leading the team and getting them in spots that I didn't think they could make it. And then especially when not having Jamal Murray, you know, saying it definitely was compromising. I don't think pressure should be as far as say like oh, he choked type pressure, but there is certain pressure there for him to get it done. But I don't think like he should be getting like, oh, he choked though, you know, because he didn't have Murray. And the time when they did have Murray, I think they were starting to come along as far as building the team. But now with last year when he won the MVP and, you know, saying for the second time and it's like, okay, we're thinking it's gonna be ready. And then Murray got cleared by the doctors and didn't play. So I mean, I was like, I don't want to put that all on Jokic. But now the pressure is starting to be on him because there is such thing. What is that to say? What do you have to say about that? Because I would say might be having some technical difficulties there, because my thing is with Nikola Jokic is that him being a big man in today's basketball where things have been such scoring, 3 points, three-pointers, you have, I think somebody did a thing where, like, I want to say the Rockets, they averaged the most points in the league at like 108. I think that was around like 2012 or something like that, 2013. And now the league leading of points per game, I think, is like 130 points, 120 some points. So, I mean, like, the league has changed so much. And here you got a big guy, a center, Jokic, being a center, doing what he can do, you know, is pretty amazing. So I don't really think so much pressure would have to be added, you know what I'm saying, to him. That's not my belief on that. And, you know, having, you know, other pieces coming along with Aaron Gordon and Jamal Murray and guys like that, I do think I think that it could really, I don't know. I think with the Nuggets in the position that they're in, if they shocked the world and just say if they just knocked off the Warriors, say if they just got in the playoff series against the Warriors and they just knocked them off, I think that would be the thing to where it'd be like pressure lifted. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, you get to it. Say if they did it in the Western Conference Finals, they went to a finals. Like, if they went out there and lost, would, you know what I'm saying, would that, you know, be detrimental to Jokic's legend? Do European players get that? You know, did Dirk get that? From my remembrance, whenever Dirk, and you got Jokic, who somebody that has been in the situation where, like, we're back after the technical difficulties, but you put Jokic in a situation where if they beat the Warriors, say in the Western Conference Finals, they make it to the finals, if they lost in the finals, say the Boston Celtics, I don't think it would hurt the legend or hurt the I guess you could say the when they say they're like, yeah, the legend or the
his legacy.
Right, yeah, thank you. His legacy. That was the word I was sitting there. I don't know why I was sitting there tripping. The legacy of Joker. You know what I'm saying? Because did Steve Nash, you know, these players before us, did they have those high pressure, you know what I'm saying, where people conversations, debates, and they're saying like, oh, is their legacy in check? Because, you know, when Dirk lost to the Hornets in the playoffs, I think that was around like 2009, 2010, something like that. They lost to the Hornets first round, and everybody was like, "Wow!" And then they finally got it together and they won in 2011. But they had to take their lumps. But people weren't sitting there saying like, "Oh man, like Dirk's legacy is trashed" or something like that. Is it the fact that European players don't get that? Or it is just they get a pass. I just think through the years where they just didn't get it. They just didn't get that type of, even though it might be great. Now I think now especially with Greek, you know, finally getting the championship. Now we got, you say, the foreign players like Greek, Dirk, Ginobili's of the world and stuff like that. Tony Parker's got rings and done great things. I think now the conversation would be like, now is Luka going to be a player where you look at like, man, his legacy, how many years is it going to take for him to get a ring? You know, because right now he's 26 years old. How many, you know, saying like, when is it going to start to be like, Luka's got to get it done. The Jokic got to get it done. What did you think on that? What are your thoughts on that?
That's a very interesting point. As far as Jokic is concerned, I think this year is the year. Like, there's more excuses. They're healthy. They've got the guys with him that he's been missing throughout the years. And I feel like he catapulted himself in a different realm as far as the players are concerned or foreign players are concerned, because he's a back-to-back MVP. We haven't seen any foreign guys that have done that. So it's like he's already in a place to where there's a different level of pressure on him. The next step is for you to win the Western Conference or win a finals. Like, one of those things has to happen in order for him to, I guess, get a little bit of the
I don't want to say respect, because I feel like he's respected, but I feel like people are kind of just waiting for that moment to be like, okay, he's solidified now. Like, we know exactly who he is. He's not just a guy that's out here getting stats. He's a guy that's actually affecting wins. I mean, last year he carried that team alone, and they did pretty well as far as their record was concerned. And even the year before, when Jamal Murray and them were healthy and they lost to us, like, they played us pretty well when we won a championship in the bubble. So, like I said, this year is kind of like, all right, you've got what you need as far as your players are concerned. You got your running mate back in Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr., like, just guys. I will say that the roster's changed a bit, so some of those guys that were instrumental aren't necessarily there. I don't want to put too much pressure on him, especially with the way that the West looks right now. I feel like we'd be asking in the West. But just for him to at least make it to the Western Conference Finals, I feel like that would be enough for us to give him the nod of, okay, like, we see it. Because I feel like with Jamal Murray coming off of those injuries, I don't necessarily think that we're going to get that same Jamal Murray that we got back in the bubble. I don't think he's going to be that guy. And I think that ultimately is going to be the demise of them, is that Jokic can do a lot, but I feel like they're going to need him to do a little too much. I would love to see, I know this is a shock, but the pairing that I would love to see is Jokic and Damian Lillard. I would love to see both of them together, because I think both of them have a lot to prove in that aspect as far as making a long run in the playoffs. It's neither one of them has, I mean, really done it. So I don't know, man. As far as Jokic is concerned, I think that in order for him to really solidify himself, he's going to have to make a nice little run. It might not have to be to the finals, but he's going to have to make a decent run in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I mean, that pairing would be something else. But, I mean, with, you know, having Dame Lillard's stance of not going nowhere, and the Nuggets would be sitting there going, no, we don't want him going nowhere. But that would be an awesome pairing. I mean, that would be something, especially with Jamal Murray. Like, say if Dame Lillard came over to Denver, and, you know, with Jamal Murray and Jokic, and that'd be wild. You know, that would be something to see right there. It would definitely be a high chance of winning a championship for sure.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, that would be something where it'd be better. It could be better than CJ McCollum, you know, in Dame Lillard. I mean, when you add Jokic, I mean, he's not Nurkic, for crying out loud. You feel what I'm saying? He's a two-time MVP. So, you know, that right there would definitely do something. I'm looking for the other person that's, you know, MVP talks and got a guard as a duo, and that is Joel Embiid over in the East with James Harden. And we've seen them, you know, rally back behind some games. They won one against the when they rallied back against the Grizzlies, and then they rallied back against the Celtics and lost ultimately because Jason Tatum is just that damn good. But I look at Joel Embiid as somebody that you know, could be up high on that MVP. He should have maybe won one of those that Jokic won. But, hey, when you're on the floor like Joker's playing way more games than Embiid, I see. But when you got Embiid, he plays defense a little bit better than Joker. So there's things you can sit there and pick and prod at, but being on the court is more important. But I would say, what are your feelings on the 76ers in their spot in the East? Like, what is your feelings on them, man? Like,
man, with Philly, it's similar to the Jokic situation, is that I feel like Embiid is in a unique position to where he has to do a lot. And as a big man, and this NBA, for a guy who hasn't been the healthiest throughout his career, it's asking a lot for him to carry that entire load throughout the season and into the playoffs. It's obvious that James Harden is not the guy that he used to be. So that's a dilemma in itself. But even outside of that, I feel like there's something about them that just does not click. Like, it just – something about them that doesn't screen championship contender. And it could be the lack of consistency from the guys around Embiid. Now, James Harden statistically has had a good season this year. But if you watch the games, you'll notice that majority of the time it is Embiid that's carrying the load, that's closing out the games, that's making the timely plays that the team needs. And in the playoffs, there's going to be moments where they're going to make sure that somebody else is going to have to beat them. As hard as that may be, they're going to focus on everybody else beating them besides Embiid. Everybody knows playoff ball is different than regular season ball. So it's going to be a whole bunch of different schemes to limit Embiid and force the others to beat them. So with that being the case, I feel like in order for them to be successful, we're going to need to see more out of James Harden. But I feel like their X factor is Tyrese Maxey. They have to figure out how to make him a little more instrumental in the offense. Like, it's very difficult when you have a guy like Harden who's ball dominant. He can facilitate, but I feel like Tyrese Maxey is really good with the ball in his hands as well. So I feel like they're going to have to find a way to mesh that and make him a little more effective come playoff time. And that way it'll take a little bit of pressure off Embiid.
Because, yeah. I mean, you think about last night, I mean, Maxey had 29, Harden had 27, Joel had 35. Just not enough defense to handle with 22 shots apiece from Kyrie and Luka. And they both get 40. You know, Luka had 42, Kyrie had 40. They both took 22 shots. You know what I'm saying? That is crazy. Luka had 12 assists. Kyrie had 6. Just not enough defense on those two guys. Not a lot of points scored anywhere else. There's nothing you can do to, you know, like, alter or do anything to try to contain those two in a situation where I would say that when you have – players, maybe they can bring some type of defensive presence. And Daniel House ain't playing. P.J. Tucker passes prime. Montrezl Harrell used to be feisty, only played 3 minutes. So, I mean, like, people that they're putting in, giving high minutes, are not your defensive guys. Tobias Harris ain't going to be ready to do nothing. I mean, even if you try to put him on Luka, you got guys like, you know, Maxey out there scoring. He took 21 shots with Embiid. So, I mean, like, It's like a thing to where I think where the 76ers will fall short is that they got to get some type of defensive identity. And like I said, in the past few games, they've shown some signs of it. It's not to say that they don't got the players to do it. They have to commit to do it. I think that's the biggest thing for the 76ers because they can score with anybody. It was 126 to 133 the final score.
Right.
And that's why I say, I mean, that's against a Western team. And that's why I asked if they can somehow get it together. But I feel that it's defensively, that's where their shortcoming is, and they need to get better. Georges Niang, you know, somebody who needs to, you know, do better. I mean, especially, you know, saying somebody who has an opinion all the time.
And that's what I mean about the pressure being put on Embiid. You look at the other teams in the East and the stars as far as the Jason Tatums or the Giannis's, like, as far as, like, Jason Tatum's situation is concerned, they have a guy in Robert Williams who's a rim protector, so he pretty much eliminates a lot of their discrepancies on defense. If somebody gets beat, you still got to deal with him. Pick and rolls, you got to deal with him. As far as Philly is concerned, Embiid is that guy. He's their only rim protector, so it's like, you're asking him to do what he does on offense and then turn around and asking him to be a man on defense as well. You look at a guy like Giannis. Giannis is the primary rim protector. Obviously, they've got Brook Lopez, but he's not really what I would consider to be an elite rim protector. He's decent, but Giannis is more of the force as far as defense is concerned. And then you look on the opposite end, he's got a guy in Chris Middleton or Drew Holiday that can fill it up at times. And Drew Holiday takes a lot of the pressure off defensively with the guard. So I feel like when I say the pressure is on Embiid, a lot of it is stemming from the defensive end. So I'm right on par with you. Like, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. I mean, it just – that's where I feel that they would be most successful, having the two scorers that they got in the backcourt with Harden and Maxey. You know, it's not to sit there and say Embiid take a back seat, but it just help out the greater good. I mean, like – I mean, shit, you're still going to be great. You're still going to be talked about as being great. You're still going to be able to hit big shots in the fourth quarter. You're going to be in the big thick of things. But I think a lot of it needs to be to where if you got a backcourt like Maxey and Harden, and you got Tobias Harris who can hit corner threes, and you got the Kuk Moss guy, you got guys like that, that, you know, Pip and Pop, Niang and stuff like that, to make and be somebody that's got to have the most shots and most points, somewhat is a little kind of compromising. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
Because you can try to be Shaq in this situation, but it's different basketball. Back then, it worked. It worked, you know? It would work. Right. But it looks good on camera. It looks good on highlights. But when it gets the job done, you're doing so much to where you might have a chip, a bone chip or something like that. You're playing with this. You're playing with that. I just feel that if he would just be the best big man and just spread himself a little thin, just, you know what I'm saying, like not spread himself so thin, he would, I think the team would rise because he's trying to do points, defense. He's, you know, hustling me. That one play, I love that. See, that's what you want. You want, like, when Harden stole the ball and he's running the floor and go, you want him to make those plays, but you don't want him to try to do it all in a sense to where it's like, you got this kid, Tyrese Maxey, that can really take y'all. I mean, that's just my thought.
I like him a lot.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's just how I feel. And, you know, people that, you know, I remember Jay Williams made a comment. It was like, people, you know, we always got to talk about the Lakers, of course, because it's, you know, it's Disney. It's ESPN. But, you know, here at Sauce Talk, we got to talk about all these teams, the teams of people that won't talk about.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you look at, like, the Kings – who what they have, I mean, they have roles. And I think guys are fulfilling their roles. And with, thank God, De'Aaron Fox has now turned into this 25-point-a-game guy. That's great around with a rookie with Keegan Murray who can average more than 10 points per game, Harrison Barnes. Then you got Domantas Sabonis getting a double-double a game. That is what you want to have a good basketball team to get into the playoffs. And they can do that. So, I mean, the way I look at the Kings is how I looked at the Atlanta Hawks from years back. But at least you got with the difference between the Kings and the Hawks, with this comparison I'm giving them, at least you got somebody can go get you a bucket.
That's fact.
And where the Hawks was limited to that, and, you know, especially whenever, you know, Joe Johnson had left, it was just like, man, they got a good team. They got good pieces. They can do this. They can do this. But they just couldn't get a guy that could get a bucket in those big moments. The Kings got De'Aaron Fox, and he's done great in the fourth quarter.
I think with De'Aaron, it's a maturation thing, like where he's learned how to step up in those moments when they need him to in the fourth quarter, because for so long they've played in games that weren't really meaningful. Like, it's not like they were, like, top of the West at any point in time. So he actually had the luxury of being able to learn how to make winning plays at the end of the game. Like, it wasn't too much pressure put on him. Like, we need you to go out there and win right now. So with him having those years under his belt, I feel like it's giving him the luxury of being able to learn how to step up in late game situations and to be to make timely plays throughout the game. And we're starting to see that. Like, it's a beautiful thing when the person who you trust the most on your team is your point guard.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal, especially in this NBA, this day and age that's so guard heavy. Like, that means a lot. And I feel like that's why we're starting to see the success of the Kings. It's no coincidence that their team success is right on par with him having the success that his career is concerned. This is one of his best years. So I just feel like we're seeing that start to gel. And like you said, they put some key pieces around him. So yeah, man, I was a little skeptical as far as what they were concerned. I still am. I don't believe that they'll make a deep run in the playoffs, but just to see them actually back in the playoff discussion and to see them back where they are, it means a lot, man. It's good basketball. When you see teams like the Kings that have been down for so many years and now they're back up in the playoffs, like that, I feel like that brings a level of excitement to the game. it's not boring anymore. Like, you don't, it's not the same teams at the top.
Right. Not boring anymore. That's the key thing right there. It's not boring anymore. And, you know, I look at other teams that I keep my eye on that could make the playoffs, and you just want to see them compete. It's nice to see other teams to get in there and maybe look a little better than where they was the last time they maybe made the playoffs. And I'm looking at a team like the Washington Wizards, who got a victory last night. But you're getting good action from players that's done it before. You know, Kyle Kuzma, 30 points. You know, that's things you want to see. You know, Kristaps Porzingis has been playing good. He had 27. And on an off night for Bradley Beal, who went 5-14, had 15 points. So, I mean, like, to have him to have that, so you have some pick-me-ups, and that's good to have. You know, those teams like that, I like to watch and see if they make that to make that run to be like, well, you know, they're going to get blown out or they ain't going to make it. I know they may not make it. I know they might not win, but certain teams that might have a chance to get the squeak in there, you want to see them try to compete. And they're right in the thick of things, you know what I'm saying, with the Raptors, with the Hawks, and with the Heat to try to get in that spot. What are your thoughts on the Washington Wizards?
Man, it's good to see. I'm excited to see where they land because I'm excited to see Bradley Beal on that big stage. It was kind of similar to how Devin Booker was not too long ago. Like, you just want to see one of the best or most appealing players in the league actually get an opportunity to show what they can, I guess, can do against some of the better competition. Kyle Kuzma, like you said, is a guy who he's experienced, man. He's got a championship, which is weird to say because it's not like he's been in the league for that long. But like I said, I'm anxious to see a guy like Brad Beal actually get to that big stage in the playoffs and actually show us what he's capable of, because we all know that he's an elite scorer. We know that he's a premier talent, but we haven't really gotten the luxury of seeing him in a while, like playing a meaningful game. So I'm excited to see that. But as far as they're concerned, I think that, like I said, their placement is going to be very pivotal. I think that it's going to be very similar to like the Hawks were a couple years back when they went on that run and had those that upset in the first round because, like, Trae Young basically led them there. I think we're going to see something of that, something similar to that. May not be that. They may not actually win the series, but I think we're going to see some moments to where they open some eyes and show, like, they've got some good talent there. But like I said, it really all depends on their matchup. But I'm excited. I'm elated. I can't even put into words the level of excitement that I have to see Brad Beal play on that level, man.
Yeah. Because, I mean, right now, they're sitting 10th, but they're looking good by winning the last two. The Heat, the Hawks, and the Raptors have lost the game. And you have the next team that's the Nets, who are, of course, falling down that tree, have lost four in a row. And you have the Knicks has won 7 in a row. So if you look at how the East is going to shape it up, I mean, the Washington Wizards can be blessed maybe with a 7 seed possibly. So they can definitely settle out in that 7-8 spot and be something, you know, to see going up against Milwaukee or Boston. Now, looking at those two matchups, it's like, well, y'all better bring, especially Porzingis, if he goes up against the likes of the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, and Boston. But the Atlanta Hawks, with they're getting the coaching situation, I don't know how they're going to be. You know, they're 31-31. The Heat are 33-30. I saw where Udonis Haslem was talking about, I'm losing sleep. This is not how I should be retired. Like, bro, you're not even getting minutes. And you're talking about losing sleep, man. But speaking of the Heat, they got Kevin Love. As of right now, they're in the playoffs.
I think the addition of Kevin Love is going to be pivotal, and it's going to be it's going to give them a bit of a boost just because of what he brings to the table as far as experience is concerned. Mm-hmm. I think that it's definitely going to help them locker room wise. They already had a guy like Udonis Haslem, but if we're being honest, man, it's one thing to have a locker room presence. It's another thing to have a locker room presence for as long as they have, and Udonis Haslem not touching the floor. So it's one thing for you to tell the players, this is what you got to do in order to win a championship. This is how it needs to be. Like, it's these young guys ain't really trying to hear that shit from somebody that's not playing. Like, it's Haslem is very respected. He's well respected. I'm almost positive these guys are not going to have any type of words toward him to basically say, like, come on, man, like, why would we be listening to you? Like, you're not even playing. I feel like they wouldn't say that, but I'm pretty sure a lot of the players are probably feeling like, all right, it's like it gets to a point where this is just starting to become ridiculous now. Like, you need locker room presence, but you also need somebody that's going to be on the court seeing what you're seeing. Like, it's one thing as a player, like someone who's played the game of basketball, the thing you hate the most is to go to the bench and have somebody that's been sitting on the bench all game try to critique you and tell you what's going wrong or what you need to do when they're not actually seeing what's going on at the time, because they're not out there with you. Like, yeah, he's played the game for a while and he can be very useful. They can definitely learn from him. But it's been, what, 3 years? 4 years since he's touched the court? Like, it's one thing to be able to help these young guys and to lead them and speak to them in the manner that they need to be spoken to. But at that point, are you a coach or are you a player, buddy? Because you're not on the court. It's different to hear it from a teammate than it is to hear it from a coach.
Yeah. That's why I was just like, what are we talking about here? Why is this? Why are y'all showing me this? Why do I care what Udonis Haslem is?
It's not relevant. It's not relevant.
Yeah, because last season, you know, around this time, it was when Jimmy Butler got into it with Spo. And, you know, Spo stood his ground, but it's just like, don't try to, like, get all dramatic now to try to find a way to get pumped up. Like, just play basketball. If y'all make it, y'all make it, and we'll see what y'all going to do. For some reason, the Heat is always a team that's respected because of their coaching and then they're in their front office. So I know that, you know, those guys are going to do the right thing, in the words of Spike Lee. So I expect y'all to be there, no doubt. But, you know, I say this again. With the Nets falling down, and the Wizards, you know what I'm saying? I would at least say against the Celtics, maybe. I think the Celtics in a shootout, like in a playoff setting, I would give the Wizards the best chance against the Boston Celtics over the Milwaukee Bucks.
I would say so too.
Then any other goes the Hawks, the Heat, the Raptors, out of those teams.
I would definitely say Milwaukee would be the least ideal. Mostly because they don't match defensively at all. Like, there's nothing they can do with Giannis.
Right.
They don't have anybody to guard Chris Middleton. Like,
it would just be bad.
He wants to have a good game, and it's not really. They don't have a guard that's going to defend him very well. Like, it just does not. They don't match up well with them at all. So yeah, I would say a team like Boston, because Boston is one of those teams that. Yeah, Jaylen Brown is effective. Malcolm Brogdon can be, and Marcus Smart, like, guys can be effective, but ultimately their success stems from Jason Tatum. So if you can get a couple where you can rattle him or have him have an off night, then you have a shot. With a team like Milwaukee, if Giannis has an off night offensively, that's not really going to change much, because other guys can step up and do what they need to do offensively. He's going to affect the game in many other ways.
Yeah, man. And then, you know, that's what we say. Like, if Middleton wouldn't have got hurt, we would have been looking at the Warriors versus the Bucks in the finals. For sure.
And that would have been a different – I'm not going to say that the Warriors would have lost that series, but it would have been much more difficult than it was against Boston. Just off
Because they were not stopping the Greek.
Exactly. As good as Wiggins was defensively, they were not. They didn't have any.
Yeah. Right. And Drew Holiday would have, you know, for the struggles that they was trying to chronicle on Clay, You know, it would have been, you know, it just, things would have been real different. You know, I think the chances would have been way higher for the Bucks. You know, they'd have been fully healthy. But, you know, if it's the fifth, we all be drunk. So, like I said, basically both of us are saying that the Milwaukee Bucks are better than the Celtics, even though, you know, people was all, you know, high on the Celtics this season. You know, Tatum, the youngest player to 1,000 threes, Jaylen Brown's cooking, you know, posterizing people. They blowing teams out. They having good games, games going down to the wire and stuff like that. Boston has been that popular team to talk about. But Milwaukee said, man, we got a 16-game winning streak going right here to kind of, you know, to change some things. And Milwaukee, it's woken up.
They look scary.
Without Greek in some games. So, I mean, it's like, whoa, you know, what are we doing here? And now the Milwaukee Bucks are now that team to talk. Now, I mean, because like I said, they've been quiet all year. And it's like, now we're here. And a 16-game win streak is a good time to do it, you know, in a playoff push like that to kind of show that we ain't messing around. Because their cast is getting the confidence. You know, the role players, the glue guys, they're getting their confidence, getting everything boosted up, man.
That's a fact. I guess it's on par with what we're talking about, but I guess it's just a different ball club. I want to ask you, how do you feel about Golden State? Like, they're still teetering around the top, the middle and the top half of the West without Steph. And Klay has been playing some of his best ball. So when Steph comes back, let's say he's Steph, what do you think about their chances of actually making a run in the playoffs? Because I don't think people are really talking about how they're not falling off with Steph being injured. So when you bring a guy like Steph back, that kind of, I mean, that bodes well for a team like them.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a team with experience. You know, they were sitting, I think, like ninth or something like that, eighth or ninth. And people was like, oh, man, they don't got Steph. What's going to happen? And, you know, but I think the main concern would be Poole's consistency. But, like, other than that, the team is experienced and knows that when to really turn it on. And I think with now is a good time to do it. They won four in a row. It's now they're going to really maybe kind of find themselves fourth, third seed. You know, it's, the Kings might come down a little bit. Grizzlies might come down a little bit. So, I mean, like – they're going to find themselves in a good spot in the playoffs, and making a run is just purely on them being the health, because now they already got a target date for Steph. I think I didn't get to see what it was, but I think they're announcing it today. But it's a run that they know how to make. I mean, when you got a team that's experienced like this, I mean, like, they're always dangerous. These teams like this are dangerous, like Boston Celtics when they made it to the finals in 2010. It was like, damn, this team made it. They didn't think this team could make it, and they made it. Right. And, you know, you look at teams like the Spurs. You look at teams that just like those Cavs teams that, you know, when LeBron went to go against the KD Warriors. And it was like, yeah, this team just know how to do it. They know how to do it. They know what it takes just to get there because of what a generational player can do for you, or just a cast of players that know how to get it done. Now you got a generational player with a cast that know how to get it done. With the Warriors. I mean, like, so they know how to – they know the game. They're like, okay, we're good. Now we're going to turn it up, and we can get in the playoffs, and they're going to be one of the dangerous teams in the playoffs. That's why I say for the Nuggets, for the Grizzlies, you know, the pressure rises. For the Suns, for the Mavericks, the pressure rises. Because when Golden State is right and they're in the playoffs, then it's a whole ball – it's a whole different ball game.
I agree. That I definitely wanted to get your take on that, because that's something that's been on my mind lately. Like, I've been, like, noticing. I'm like, these guys ain't really going nowhere. Like, they're ascending. They're not dropping off.
They know how to play the regular season game. They know how to play the regular season game. You know, they might be laughing at Milwaukee. Like, look at them. They're out there winning all these games and real playing hard and all that stuff. You never know. They might be like, we've done that before, you know.
Right.
We've done that. So, I mean, they have done it. They have been this good. That's why they're a dynasty. I think, you know, when you look at teams like that to just know how to just get through a regular season and know how to get to where they want to get, that's a dynasty type team, and they're that. So they're very scary in the playoffs. I mean, they're trying to repeat for sure.
That's the biggest thing, is it's like they are the defending champs and nobody's even talking about them. Like that's that's kind
of. I think the world knows too. I think the world knows too that they're not. I mean, like, it's kind of like one of those things where new packs, it's like new, when something new, a new flavor comes out or something like that, like, you know what's the OG that's good. You know, like, man, you want to see if this team with 19 losses is like the Nuggets. Look at y'all, or the Grizzlies and the Kings. You're like, well, now KD is at the Suns. You want to see who's going to beat that team to go up against that team. Because just like earlier, I sit there and I said, well, that's safe for shits and giggles that the Nuggets beat the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. I said the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. I didn't put nobody else but there, but the Warriors. So, I mean, that's the team that you know that you're going to put there. But who's going to be that new team or that team that you want to say that's going up against the Warriors that can maybe knock them off or the Warriors beat them where you can bolster their legacy?
Do you think that this is the year that the Grizzlies take that step?
The only thing about the Grizzlies that I see of maybe slippage, they got to get Steven Adams back. I think they are, but I think they, you know, saying they got to get back to their defensive ways. They're blowing leads. They're letting, you know, saying I think whenever games get tight like that, you know, having Morant is a great thing. You know, he does special things. He scored 28 points in the third quarter against the Lakers, went crazy in the fourth. So you got a player that can do that, but sometimes he can be a little, you know, he can be contained in a sense to where they cannot find ways to score. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's shown. So their biggest thing is for the, you know, for the, I think the brashness they bring, you know, they're not the bad boy Pistons, but they bring a certain type of persona to where they're going to have to put up or shut up. So, I mean, I think they're one of the top five teams in the West that has to really, you know, have a convincingly nice, good series win first round and really compete, because getting put out in the first round would be detrimental to the Memphis Grizzlies.
Absolutely. To me, they're too loud. They are a team that is entirely too loud for a team that doesn't have the resume that you would think a team like that would have. For instance, like a team like Dallas, quiet as kept, Dallas has improved nearly every year that Luka has been there, whether it's making the playoffs and then making it out of the first round, making it out of the second round, and then last year making it to the Western Conference Finals. Like, they're actually doing what you would expect a team like the Memphis Grizzlies to do with the way that they talk. Like, they're, like I said, they're a very loud group of individuals that talk like they've achieved so much. So,
and Dylan Brooks, you know, walking in the arena that outfit where I was like, look here, Dylan Brooks, you ain't made it to that point yet. Like, and you shouldn't even, like, he looked like Stone Cold Steve Austin over there, and like somebody tried to be in, like, you know, like somebody could do a little dress up over in another country or something like that, but like, I'm Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Right. You
know, I was like, nah, y'all not there yet, man. Like, but I do, the one thing I will say, I like Morant and his dad, man. Like, that's
me too, man. Me too.
I like that. That's the one thing about Morant I like, you know, his game, of course. But, you know, I think, like you said, being loud, I agree 100%. Being just loud.
Yeah. Like that, I feel like that's the only way that you can really describe them. And it's not a bad thing. Like, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but there comes a time where you have to match that level of loudness with your play. Like, your play has to match it on the court. And by matching it, I mean not just adding up all of these regular season wins. Like, I mean making a run in the playoffs and really showing people, okay, this is a team that people have to watch out for. Because, I mean, let's look at earlier this year. Like, not even earlier this year, last year, how they did all of that chirping and we want Golden State on Christmas, and we want this, and they're trying to, we're going to make that a rivalry. Like, they can't beat those guys.
Yeah, they're making it a rivalry.
without Steph and got embarrassed. Like, that's what I mean by the loudness. Like, it's like, y'all put up or shut up. Like, you did all of this talking about how you wanted Golden State on Christmas, and you looking forward to the matchups, and you ain't worried about nobody in the West at a point in time. Like, now it's like, okay, that's cool, but what are you going to do when you step on that court as a ball club? Not just Ja, because Ja backs up what he says for the most part, but as far as the team is concerned, their level of success don't match the energy that they bring.
Mm-hmm. They don't. And to lose a series the way they did to the Warriors, they definitely should have shut up. But no, we're not worried about the West. Ah, get out of here.
Got it. Crazy. Loud.
Just crazy. Just loud noise, man. Just loud noise. You look at teams like Cleveland. Cleveland could be a team described like Memphis. You don't even hear them. Don't even hear them talking. Don't even hear them talking, man. That's the funny thing. They got more wins than Memphis. Don't even hear them talking.
Yep.
I mean, come on, man. I respect that. Even from like a team like Boston, you don't hear them. You know, they got Marcus Smart on the team. They got, you know, players that like to be, you know, saying with swag or whatever like that. You don't hear them. All you hear is Grant Williams, and he ain't talking about nothing.
Right.
Man, I like picking on him, man. He's funny. Funny. That's a funny player right there. He's a funny NBA basketball player that plays good. I mean, like, I'm not picking on him in that regard of saying he's a good player. He can knock down a corner three, smart. He likes to be a guy that can get in the huddle and talk. And I think that's what makes it funny how he looks doing it. Because, you know, last year it was funny how Doka and Tatum would look at him. They'd be like, Doug, would you go somewhere and sit down? Like,
he's a star in his role.
Yeah.
And him being a star in his role, some role part. He thinks that
right.
He's a star.
Yeah. Like, he come over there talking, and it's just like, hold on, man. Like, I'm not hearing you right now. And I can just tell that, like, he probably exhausted them more than anybody else on the team. But I think this year is maybe a little different. I think it goes away with more time. Getting more time on the court and experience and stuff like that. I just think him at that time, it was some camera shots where I was like, man, they probably like, shut up. Right. Probably not so much this year because now he's going into a leadership role and he's still playing good basketball. But, yeah. You know, I think the crazy thing is that the rookie of the year talk has shifted from Banchero to that Williams kid over in the Thunder, man. That's crazy.
Yeah, I think that it's just a matter of people getting tired of talking about Paolo already. Like, it's just it's something more intriguing to talk about somebody like that as opposed to talking about the favorite. Like, he's the number one overall pick. Most people, once Chet got hurt, assume that he will win it. So now it's kind of like, oh, there's somebody else we can talk about. Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do that. But
yeah.
I feel like it's already won.
I think the funny thing is that I think the Magic played the Thunder a few days ago and Paolo hit like three jumpers and like buried them. And I was like, ah, look at that. I think it was the Thunder they played. I gotta go back. Yeah, no. Yeah, I can't remember what. It wasn't very recent. It happened this season. But Banchero like shows like I can dagger you with jumpers, and that was like I was like, oh snap,
yeah.
It was the Pelicans. It was the Pelicans. It was Paolo, 26.
He's a different breed, man. Like he's one of them guys. Like I'm hoping he stays healthy throughout the duration of his career. But he's one of those guys that really just knows how to play the game of basketball.
Mm-hmm. He's special. But that Jalen Williams, I mean, he did some special things against the Lakers in that LeBron game when he was good. I said, he is good now.
No mistake about it. He's good. He definitely showed that I belong here. Like,
yeah, I said, damn. And, you know, he probably numbers-wise ain't done enough, but he definitely belongs in the NBA, plays for Portland out of Kentucky, Mr. Shaden Sharp. Holy shit. Mm. I mean, God, he he jumps at the gym, man. Like
that poster that he did. Oh,
God. And you know, people sitting there, that Jaren Jackson dunk on Anthony Davis, man, like Jesus, he fucking took his head off.
Yeah.
Like, that was kind of dirty, man. Like before he even really caught the ball, he elbowed him. Like thanks.
Yeah, I agree.
But you know, that was a hard that was a toughie. You know, I was like, he banged on him. Like banged on him. But we got the win against the Thunder. You know, Schroeder has these on and off games. I'm worried about just that. But Austin Reeves, man, he's one of my favorite players, man. The kid can just really, like,
he's play the game.
It's like now he's came so far to where it's like now he's too, you know, he's over there pulling guys to the side and talking to them. He's, you know, saying just how he gets to the rim. Like, it's like Ginobili. It's like watching Ginobili. We got a Ginobili. This is how I feel. It's like we got a Ginobili on our team.
I can see that.
Like, it's just the way he gets to the rim, how he does his moves, and you think, like, how slow it is. And, like Duncan Robinson could eat your heart out. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Even Tyler Hero couldn't get to the lane like that.
I feel like he's deceptively athletic. He's more athletic than what people think that he is. And it shows on some plays. Like, he makes moves. You're like, oh, I didn't know he was capable of that. I didn't know he had that in his bag. And not even just offensively. Like, defensively, he gets after it, too.
Yeah.
It's funny because everybody has that whole stigma of, oh, white guys can't guard in this day and age as far as the NBA is concerned. And like, this is another instance of a guy like I'm not in no way comparing them defensively, but a guy like Alex Caruso, who started off like on the bench with us. People didn't really know much about it. Everybody's like, oh, he's pretty good. Like, people aren't blowing around him. And then ultimately you're like, oh, no, he's a really good defender. Like, he can really defend. And a guy like Reeves, he's not in that category as far as his defensive ability, but he's in the category as far as people don't believe that he's as good defensively as he really is.
Mm-hmm. So Grayson Allen, eat your heart out. He's a good defender. He's a good player. He's a good defender, but he's dirty as hell. But I ain't gonna sit there and say that on the defensive end. He does bring it.
Yeah, we ain't gonna talk bad about Grayson while I'm on this show.
Well, I mean, I took it back because he plays for the Bucks, and I'm like, well, they won 16 in a row. They're really good defensively. He adds to that. So I'm going to back off of that a little bit.
You know how I am about my Blue Devils now.
Hey, I will rewind the tape back to where you said Jason Tatum be shrinking a little bit there. So I got that on wax, okay?
Tatum is my guy. That's my guy. But like I said, I don't know what it is about Golden State, but they bring out the absolute smallest parts of him.
Yeah, they did, man. They really did. They forced him to. It was. They actually had people thought he was hurt. I mean,
I thought it was just a finals thing, but then it happened to trickle down into the regular season this year when they played, and I'm like, uh oh.
Yeah.
But you know how like star players always have that one team where for some reason they just don't play well against them. I don't think that it's more of him not having ability to dominate against them. I think it's a mental thing for him.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be something he got to get over because Jaylen Brown has no problem. Jaylen Brown wants all the smoke. You know, so he might not have all the ability that Tatum has, but he's just right up there. And he ain't scared of jack shit.
I agree.
I mean, Jason Tatum can learn off of that, I guess. But Jaylen Brown, man, he is never scared. I've always been a fan of Jaylen Brown. Always been a fan of him. And it's a good team. Just gotta hate the Celtics, you know? It's just what we gotta do.
Absolutely. I was the moment they drafted Jason Tatum, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
All like, places. Because like, I was telling people the whole time leading up to the draft, Jason Tatum's gonna be the best to come out of this class. Jason Tatum's got a lot of Kobe in him. Like, he's one of those guys that he can instantly come in and affect the team. And he's going to be one of those guys that once he progresses a little bit, he's going to be a force.
We won a Cal Kuzma. We won a Cal Kuzma.
Lo and behold, he goes to
Boston. We can get Lonzo Ball and we can get the Kuzma guy. No. Damn it. We get the Tatum guy. The Kool-Aid that LeVar Ball stirred up, man. I mean, it must have been the best goddamn Kool-Aid.
I feel like at the time it was I don't necessarily want to say a good decision, but it was an understandable decision, especially with where the Lakers were at that time. We desperately needed somebody to run the show. And Lonzo Ball was everything that, you know, he was advertised to be when he was healthy. But the fact that he can't stay on a fucking court.
Yeah, that's the problem.
His biggest Achilles heel, because he's improved in almost every aspect of his game every year. They said, oh, he can't shoot. Okay. He improved his 3-point percentage. He's a little lackadaisical on the defensive end. Okay, now he's out here strapping. Like, he's consistently a great perimeter defender. Oh, he can't score. Okay, well, he's going to go out and have games where he can put up big numbers on occasions. He's not going to be that way all the time, but he's going to show that if I'm having a good night, I do have the ability to do that. And like I said, he's done that, but his biggest thing is he just cannot stay on the court, man. And I think that's why we're seeing a boost in Chicago and adding Patrick Beverley, because that's ultimately all they were missing is Lonzo. Like, Lonzo, he's perfect. He's that guy. The team is built for him to step in and do what he does at a high level. They don't need him to go out here and score a lot. They don't need him to go out here and do this and do that. Go out here and defend and facilitate. And that's what he was going to do. And we're seeing a guy in Patrick Beverley who's defending. Yep. So that's ultimately true. What they were missing.
Yeah, that's true. I feel bad for Lonzo because I know he wants to compete. I know he ain't sitting back like, oh, man, like Ben Simmons. You know what I'm saying? Jesus Christ.
Man, don't.
I'm not even going to get into that guy at all. But it just makes me feel bad for the guys that got hurt or just their career couldn't be what they wanted to be. Thinking of Ben Simmons, though. Like, you think of like somebody like Blake Griffin that played in big time basketball, was the conference finals and stuff like that. And, you know, because of his body breaking down, you know what I'm saying? It got less of itself. You know, just think like Ben Simmons right now, you are a fully able athlete.
Exactly.
And it just kills me that from what I've seen that you don't want to tap into that no more, because it's not like that you can't do it. It's not like you tore an ACL or got Tommy John surgery or you tore an Achilles or you are good. And it's just like, I don't know, man. It's just weird to where I think of players like, I made me think of Blake Griffin. I don't know why, but it was just like, just think of Blake Griffin could be able to have that, you know, if like whenever during that time, because whenever those, when I mentioned that he was in a Western Conference final when he was deep in the play, he was hurt, banged up. This was hurt. And he never really got full credit of that. And people called him a bitch and shit like that. And it's just like, that man played through it, man. Even with Detroit, when they went to the playoffs, he had like four different injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And played through it. And, you know, you look at players like that, and you look at Derrick Rose, but you look at, you know, of course, those guys, you know, but Brandon Roy's and stuff like that. But I'm looking at the people that played through them or just had nagging injuries to where they couldn't be 100%.
Man, people would kill them in Ben Simmons' position.
Yeah. And it's just like Ben Simmons is like, bro, like I just don't even want him in an NBA uniform no more.
it's almost like what can he really do to make people believe again? Because he was already in a situation with two of the greatest scorers in the NBA, and he still couldn't even make his mark.
Like, yeah.
Granted, there was a lot of stuff going on with Brooklyn and all of that, but at the end of the day, he still got to make himself
Yeah, like, you got at least throw a nice dime.
There's no fucking way should not be averaging less than 12 assists a game with those guys around you. Like, right. On any given night, you should be filling up the stat sheet.
He would average a triple double because he would get a double double with 10 assists and 10 rebounds. 10
rebounds, absolutely.
And then he'd get 10 points by just dunking the ball.
Exactly, getting some breakaways.
Yeah, like, hell, we wouldn't even be on you about a jumper then. That's what I said. That was just tough, man. That's like Monty Ellis, man. You know, the injuries he had to go through and stuff like that. If he didn't have to go through those injuries, just think. Like, he wanted to be out there. He was a competitor. He was a baller. You know what I'm saying, man? Like, it pisses me off, man. That man, I think Ben Simmons, 25 years old, 26?
Yep. Too young to be going through what he's going through.
All right. And I hope if he's going through something in a mental – I'm praying that he would get, you know, right, even for the aspects of life, you know what I'm saying? So I'm not being hard on him, like, I don't care if he's really going through something where basketball is being blocked out of his psyche. But if it's a situation where he's milking the NBA, if he's sitting there just like, man, I'm just getting this bread, I would hate that.
Absolutely.
Like, that's the thing I would fear the most if he's. And that right there, good people, that was me and Ishkwe having a nice conversation. Good show. Comes to an end right there. As we talked about the NBA, the playoff push, we talked about different players and whatnot, teams and things going on, the standings, the stats. You get to hear all that good stuff, man, some good stuff. So I would say if you would disagree, I would love that, you know what I'm saying? If you agree, I would love that too. This is something I just want y'all to hear my takes and hear my guests' takes on what is going on in the pro sports area and, you know, like I said, tapping into the local scene as well. But I'm not here to sit there and say that I'm Skip Bayless, I'm Stephen A. Smith, or any of those people like that. But when you come to hear this podcast, you know, this podcast to where this is something that I look at as my baby and something that I want to grow to where people just to hear me and hear people that come on as we talk about anything that's going on with the NBA, NFL, like I said, boxing, music, movies. This is what you're getting. And it's straight off the top of the dome sports analysis on all aspects of the game. So we're trying not to miss certain stuff and not just sitting there just saying, oh, this score or this team did this or whatever like that. We're tapping into things, giving our opinions on things. So if it's on par from what you hear and what you would say, the upper echelons, man, that'd be a great thing. If you hear this podcast in that light to where it's like, man, what they're saying and over there at Sauce Talk is, you know, what I like to wake up and hear, man, music to my ears. I'm gonna keep on bringing it to y'all, man. You know, not stopping on that, on giving listeners, you know what I'm saying, the pure Sauce Talk vibe. And that is the vibe that I've been trying to, you know, pursue starting this podcast all the way back when I was calling it Sauce Straight Talk. And that is, you know, organic barbershop talk type podcast that we're not, you know, I'm not segment to segment. I'm not sitting there, you know, doing all that stuff like that. We are coming on here, we're chopping it up. And I think people enjoy that. And I hope y'all do. So this is another episode of Sauce Talk. My good buddy, Ishkwe. Hope he's working on something in the booth. You know what I'm saying? I want to hear another classic coming out. But, you know, his sport insight is, you know, especially talking to him with, you know, about basketball, football. You know, he got a good mind, and his logic is right you know what I'm saying, to where when we come on, the chemistry is booming, you know what I'm saying? So that's one good buddy I like to come on. John Overstreet's another one. And of course, I like whenever Leroy Ellison, you know what I'm saying, comes and chops it up with me. Got to get Sam Jones back on here, man. He's another winner from the Pick and Roll podcast. Him and Ishquay got that. I wonder if they're going to get that back popping. But, hey, man, Sauce Talk, man, it's going down. Y'all have a good one. That's going to be the end of the episode.